every day. Plenty of young cats still got affection for real spirits.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones. Now, here's Clinton and Leslie.
What's up?
How's it going, Leslie?
Is that a little too loud?
A little too loud. Little feedback. We'll turn that down some.
But it's okay. It's all right.
We're good.
We got it together now. Oh, it's Sunday morning.
It is Sunday morning.
But you know what? We got an extra hour today, so it's okay.
I don't understand people who focus on that. I am all about self-delusion. The clock changes. Time doesn't change. That's the way you overcome.
Yes, but you,
the time dilation.
Yes, but you
I
got
slept
an
the
hour.
Same amount.
You slept the same amount?
I slept the same amount.
Yes, but you actually slept an extra hour.
I didn't sleep an extra hour.
Oh my goodness.
Cuz I turned my clock back like last night at 5.
Oh, what'd you do that for?
Because I didn't want to forget, and I'm like da 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 boom. I made the shift then.
My clock is on my phone, so it does it automatically. So I went to bed at 1 a.m. with my alarm set for 8.
So how is it in the 21st century?
It's okay. It's good. There's some good things about this century.
I hear that your phones require batteries the size of cars.
No, they're actually really small.
And that they're your best friends.
Well, and
I hear that you guys communicate with your phones even more than you communicate with people who are actually in the room with you.
Yes, we actually do. But, you know, the good thing is that teleporter is coming any minute now.
Oh, really?
That teleporter is coming any minute now. Done with, you
so
know.
So North Korea does not have to worry about that ballistic missile program at all.
Not at all, no.
Once the teleporter comes, just drop that nuclear.
Just drop it. It's good.
Teleport it right there.
Yeah. So, you know, once the... And then,
Mr. President, you've got a teleport coming in for Kim Jong-un. Would
no!
you like to accept? Oh, too late. There's no block in the teleport, Mr. President.
He'll have to get Scotty to do that for him.
that's a frightening thought,
isn't it? Can you imagine?
I cannot guess at how plugged in Trump is to the popular culture. I have no read on him at all.
Well, because
I have no read on him.
He's like, trying to
like
make
Barack
popular
Obama,
culture.
I'm sure Barack Obama has seen at least 3 episodes of Star Trek.
Oh, of course.
In his lifetime.
Oh, of course.
Positive. George W. Bush, clueless.
Absolutely.
I bet.
Yep.
Probably watched an episode or two when he was stoned or high in college.
Right. But doesn't remember it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton... I don't think, like, maybe when he wasn't macking on some, you know, co-ed.
Intern, yeah.
Intern or co-ed with him in college. George Bush? No, not at all.
No, never, no.
George Bush couldn't even name a Beatle, I think.
Oh, no, he couldn't.
No.
Because that's the devil's music.
Completely. Completely. But, you know, and I think Ronald Reagan probably doesn't know. I mean, I think he's tuned in with the pop culture, or he was tuned in with the pop
culture.
Yeah, because
he's dead now.
He was only concerned with the people that he could rat out to the FBI, because old habits die hard. Look
yes.
it up. Informed for the FBI.
Oh, my
Ronald
goodness.
Reagan.
Well, you know, everybody's got that
Trump,
that youthful indiscretion.
I don't know about Trump. I'm pretty sure his professional wrestling cred.
Oh my God.
I think his knowledge is pretty straight with that. But other than that, we should probably get to our first guest.
Yeah, wrestling and NASCAR, that's probably the only thing he knows about.
I don't think he knows. He has other people drive for him. Why would he care about NASCAR? Let's get to our first guest.
Yes, shall we?
Yes, indeed, since we're already a minute over. Sitting on the phone, let's hope. Nina Staben, how are you doing, Nina?
Hi, how's it going, everyone?
It's going great. So, you are here to talk to us about... What?
Check the stuff out before. Nina, how's the Charlotte's Foot Ballet doing?
I wanted to get it right. That's why I wanted the paper. How's the ballet going, Nina?
We are really excited at the ballet. We've got an event coming up this Saturday called Upfront Salute. It is our very special Veterans Day celebratory performance, and it is actually on November 11th, so we host it on Veterans Day itself. And it is part of our in-house Upfront series where we perform in our studio theater in our home facility, and we have food sponsored by the Shabeen Pub and Braai, and we have wine, and it's just a lovely experience for patrons to come and enjoy a bit of dinner theater while they get to watch some really wonderful works being performed. One such work that we've got going is our special World War II ballet, Letter to My Love, that is very special to many of our Charlottesville Ballet patrons and to a lot of our dancers and families who are very touched by that particular piece. So we're really excited to bring it back out of the repertory and get everybody excited for Upfront Salute this weekend.
So let me get this straight. So Upfront, because I've been trying to work this out ever since I've been booking you. Ever since I booked you. Upfront is the name of the series.
Yes, that's correct. Yep.
Right. So this is part of your Upfront series, and the name of the actual show is Salute.
Yes.
But Salute is made up of individual pieces and individual dances.
Yes, that's correct. Yep. So it's a mixed repertory piece, so we have a couple different pieces that we'll perform on Saturday.
Cool. How many pieces make up Salute?
So the final number you will find out on Saturday. We, as I mentioned, we'll have the big World War II piece. We'll have one sassy Spanish solo that is choreographed by our co-director Emily Hartka called Elan. And then we have a couple of the divertissements, or the special variations from the Nutcracker, which are things that you'll probably recognize, such as the Russian dancers or the Trepak. The Flowers piece, as well as solos by the Sugar Plum Fairy, and a few other of the small selections from the Act Two Land of the Sweet Nutcracker that are familiar to many, many ballet audiences.
So what are the ages of the dancers performing?
So the dancers performing are members of the professional company, so they are all 18 and up. You know, they're adults. This is their career, this is their day job. So they range from 18 to 29. 18 to 29.
Very
so,
cool.
Quite a range in there.
So, and how many are performing?
So we have a company of about 20 dancers. So I'd say about 15 or so of them will be performing on Saturday. Everybody will be there. We'll all be there, you know, part of the event. But we'll have about three quarters of the company will actually be performing in the pieces on Saturday.
So I know that one of the pieces is a restaging. So it's one that you've done before. Is Salute in general a new production? Is it a new concept? Is it something that you guys have done before? Can you talk about how you came to the idea of this?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Salute, we actually did the original Upfront Salute back in the fall of 2015 when we were able to closely match the performance again with Veterans Day. I don't think it was on November. It wasn't on November 11th that year, but it was very close to Veterans Day when we performed it. But the particular work that we're reviving, Letter to My Love, it was actually originally choreographed in 2011. So it's not a new piece, but we brought it back in 2015 because we felt like the time was right. We wanted to bring the choreographer back to set it on a new cast and perform it. And then 2 years later, here we are again. We just felt like the time was right to bring the choreographer back and restage this piece in its third cast. And it's actually, it's Charlottesville Ballet's 10th anniversary season this year. The 2017-18 season, we're celebrating our 10 years in Charlottesville. And this particular work has a lot of significance just because it was one of the earlier works that was made on the company. And I think also just because of the impact, the emotional impact it has both on audience members and the dancers, because I think it's hard for anyone who sees it not to be moved in some way you know, shape or another. You know, even if you have never had an active service member in your family, or, you know, you have no, you know, no relation to any veterans in your lives, this piece is still very moving, and I think it's hard not to be affected by it. So we just feel like the time is right to bring it back yet again.
Have the dancers been able to, have the dancers themselves been moved? Have they been able to personally connect to the piece? Because I doubt, I mean, I could be wrong, but I doubt you have many veteran dancers, just because to be a professional ballet dancer, it takes so much time, so much focus, so much effort. I can't imagine somebody taking 4 to 6 years away from professional dance to go and do military service.
Yes. So, you're exactly right. You know, professional dancers, you know, they usually don't take any breaks at all from dancing throughout their career, you know, from the time they're very little to the time they retire in their 30s, or, you know, they rarely take a break to do anything else professionally. But I think this piece is interesting because it does have such an effect on the dancers performing it. I think it's the themes in it. It is about the women who are left behind during World War II and their experiences, both as Rosie the Riveters and how they were contributing to the war efforts, but also just their emotional experiences being left behind by the men in their lives. I think that is just very universal, and I think that the themes and the feelings imparted by the ballet, I think it's hard not to connect with them, you know, whether you are a dancer or you're an audience member. I think there's just something about that raw emotional power about, you know, someone you care about going off to war, or even just, you know, leaving and being gone. It's hard not to be moved by that. So the dancers, it's actually, it's just really touching to watch them perform it, because you can tell how much the piece means to them.
So when it was first choreographed, how did the idea, you did it specifically for the day, or was it something that you guys had been working on as an idea and then decided to perform later?
So when the ballet was originally commissioned in 2011, it was choreographed by a woman named Rainey Jarrell, who's of Atlanta, Georgia, and the ballet, Charlottesville Ballet, contacted her and said, "Hey, we want you to make a piece for the company," but, you know, we didn't actually give any specifications of what we wanted the piece to be, or what we wanted it to be about. We gave her sort of an open book. And Rainey, the choreographer, her husband, right as she was being asked to make a ballet, her husband was being deployed to Afghanistan. And so she came back to the ballet and said, "Hey, I need to make a ballet about this. This is the only thing that's on my mind. This is everything. I'm really connecting with these stories of World War II women, and I want to make a ballet about this." And so she did. And it just resonated really strongly with our whole organization and with our community. And then, interestingly enough, in 2015, when we wanted Rainey to come back and restage the piece, for this Upfront Salute production that we first did then, her husband was being deployed yet again.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, leaving behind now two small children. So it's been kind of an interesting trajectory, and you're not going to believe it. But when we asked Rainey to come back this year, again, another 2 years later in 2017, to come back and set the piece again in its third iteration, her husband is yet again being sent overseas for military duty.
That's crazy.
So, I know. So it's just this ballet has just a very strong connection also with the choreographer and her personal life, which I think translates.
It would have to.
That's it. So her story is sort of just embedded in the ballet itself.
That's really cool, Nina. I'm so glad that you came on and to talk to us about this. So the show is November 11th?
Yes. Yep.
You got two shows on that day, right?
Saturday.
Okay. Great. And it's going to be at the ballet studio?
Yep. It's going to be at our home studio, which is our facility off of Route 29 in Woodbrook. We are in a big yellow building across from the Rio Hill Shopping Center. So hopefully look for the yellow building and you'll find us.
Yes. All right. Everybody go see some ballet. Thank you so much, Nina. We'll talk to you next time.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
All right.
15 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. 16 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Homegrown. If you're just joining us, hey, how's it going? We're here with our next guest. Coming all the way from UVA and being here today, Leslie M. Scott Jones. Oh, what am I doing?
Turn it down. Off. There you go.
Thank you. Here are our Leslie M. Scott Jones stepping down from host duties to be a guest.
How about that?
And also, Brandon Lee, my man Brandon, man with a plan. And Chiquita Melvin.
Hi.
All you guys are acting in UVA's upcoming production of, what is it? It's a play.
Yes, it's a play. Seven Guitars.
Awesome. Talk to me about Seven Guitars.
Well, it's the story of a wannabe blues singer, I guess you can say.
That's harsh, a wannabe blues singer.
Aspiring. I'm not trying to throw shade or anything. I'm just saying he's not there yet.
And yet you just automatically threw shade.
Right. Playing Louise. That's what she does.
Without even intending to. Yeah.
Louise throws shade.
Scraggly, no talent, wannabe blues singer.
No. He's got talent and everything, but he's had one song
right.
that's been released, and then
starting to play on the radio,
and then he got thrown in jail.
Yeah,
as can happen,
especially in 1948 or 2017. But anyway,
exactly. As is an occupation or an existential hazard.
Yes,
of right. being an existential hazard.
Yes,
yeah. I like that phrase. I'm going to start that
existential hazard. That's very good. So the play, the entire play is a flashback. We open the play the evening of his funeral.
Right.
And then the rest of the play is a flashback to the week of his death. And then it ends again with the night of his funeral.
Right. And so this is yet another work by the fabulous August Wilson.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So hey, what the heck is UVA doing an August Wilson play?
It's okay.
Check with the community, because as my computational consideration is, I believe that there's a group in town who is attempting to do not one, not two, but all ten.
All ten,
of
yes.
August Wilson's.
And it's okay because of which this is one. But the wonderful Lady T checked with me before she said yes to doing it. She was at the end of Fences, came up to me. She's like, okay. We want to do Seven Guitars. Where is that in your lineup? And I was like, oh, it's not till the end.
After they'd already scheduled it, sounds like.
No, they hadn't. They had announced it or anything before.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So she was, if we were going to do it the next season, she would have chosen something else. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she checked. Lady T's awesome.
Don't you understand?
Teresa Davis.
Brandon? Brandon is over here like fiddling with stuff. What are you doing?
Just in a problem.
Red, come to the table.
Trying to get a little beef going on here because that's what sells.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what sells.
Yeah. But you know what?
Especially in the African American community, I'm trying to get like a town coast gown coast.
Oh my god.
Yeah. You know, I think too, just with the story, it's so relevant. You have a lot of young, aspiring African American artists out here, black artists that want to do music, that want to have a career in the entertainment industry. And I think this is a story that talks about like the ups and downs of what can come.
Preach. Talk about that.
Of pursuing an entertainment career while being black. And that in and of itself, pursuing an entertainment career, period, is difficult. Yeah. But
indeed.
Pursuing an entertainment career while being black is even more difficult. There are just other things that you have to overcome, you know? And so I think it's just very relevant to so many young aspiring artists out here, which I think is a great reason for UVA to put on this particular August Wilson show.
So you are in the graduate program, Chiquita.
I am.
At UVA, the graduate acting program.
Yes.
At UVA. Can you talk more about challenges pursuing a graduate, or just pursuing theater in general as an African American? I mean, they had parts for you, first of all.
Right. This way?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Coming into this program, I mean, I was doing some acting before coming to UVA, mm-hmm. and I, you know, encountered some things. I lived in LA for a little bit. And coming here, I was wondering what the opportunities might be, but knowing, and I asked that before I even accepted, about, you know, how do you all go about casting? Is it, you know, colorblind casting or what have you? And, you know, they made it very apparent that they would, you know, if you are fit for a role, then they'll cast you in it. And so,
there he is.
Okay. So I decided, you know, I think this would be a good opportunity, you know, with everything that it offered, and I wanted to get further training. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed like it was the right step, and it was. It absolutely was.
Cool.
And in the house, the man himself, Floyd Schoolboy Bunn.
I don't think we introduced late coming guests.
My bad. You know, daylight saving time. I didn't get the CPT off my block. I apologize. You know,
Kevin Miner just walking in the studio.
Yes.
Hello. So Brandon.
Yeah.
Come on up to the mic.
You got
to
get up to the mic. You got to get up to the mic.
Come on.
Sorry for that.
So why don't we do this? Why don't you guys share a mic, and then you two share a mic.
Okay.
Right on the mic. So get in close. So Brandon, so you have done, you just came from doing Jitney.
Right.
Down the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Turn around. What's it like doubling up on August Wilson? And which character are you playing in Seven Guitars, by the way?
I'm playing Ray Carter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I play Fillmore and Jitney. So there's some interesting ties to, I think, the two characters. So what's fortunate about it is being able to kind of go into character roles that are similar. Mm-hmm. So that was a good thing. I think the other part of it is being able to continue to read August Wilson and continue to dive into what he was trying to do for the black experience in America. So that has been the most beneficial part. I'm able to read again. I'm able to listen to other actors, watch other actors and actresses go at the different characters that he has. And then we bring in all these life experiences. Like the last couple months, I came into Jitney in August.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, the changes of events in my own life have kind of like paralleled some of the characters. So anyway, I'm enjoying it. I'm just enjoying the ride right now.
Cool. You know, it's all fun and games until you double dip in August, until you do like multiple times, because then you start. And it's an interesting thing with actors, because we bounce from it's going to be a lot of inside baseball here, because we're all just actors.
Right.
But interesting thing with actors, because we bounce from production to production to production, show to show to show to show, unless you're chilling with my boy Billy Shakes. Sometimes it's rare to sit with a particular playwright and sit with that playwright's work and start to get to know that playwright's idiosyncrasies and that playwright's feel. Kevin Chiquita, have either of you done August Wilson before?
Absolutely. I have. I've done Fences before.
Oh, really? Cool. Yes, we did Fences. Now, where were you in Fences?
I played the role of Lyons Maxon in Fences at Bradley University.
Yeah.
I played Lyons years ago. Not that long ago, probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
Look at you dropping brown.
Years ago. 20 years ago.
When I was in Brown University. Yeah,
back in my day. Right?
Ironically enough, not many brown people at Brown University.
Right.
You'd think there would be.
Yeah, no, and that the understanding of it grows. You know, that's the biggest thing is your experience as a black person in America grows, and with that your understanding of what August Wilson was talking about grows. So I'm grateful for this opportunity because I have so much more of an understanding, and I'm still growing in that, so I can bring so much more to this role than I probably could have as a 20, 21, 22-year-old playing Lyons in Fences. Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, speaking of August Wilson and his understanding, I wonder if you guys encounter this, that as we grow older, or as we plug in more and more to African American history, African American culture, if we grow to meet August Wilson's anger. Because he does not have a positive outlook.
Right.
He's got axes to grind, and I think that that when you first encounter August Wilson, it's possible to say, "Wow, this guy's a little, he's a little intense." Mm-hmm. And then as you open your eyes more and more, you're like,
"For a reason,
right? You begin to discover this. This is actually my very first August Wilson piece. So I feel so blessed to have this opportunity. But one thing I will say is that his approach and his thought process, which you see come through in his work, I think is something that, especially living during this time in this generation, that maybe you wouldn't have experienced or seen firsthand. But the older you get, I know the older I've gotten, the more things that I've seen, the more things that I've come to realize, like, wow, you know, this is really messed up how this works. And it's just really, and so when there are certain like things that make people angry in his plays and things that, like, the things that happen, it's just like, man, you know, this is so relevant. And when these were written, what, late 90s, early 2000s were like his last ones. And it's just like, but we're still dealing with some of these same issues. And these same issues were happening in the 40s, which is when this play is set. And they're still happening now. Why is that? What is it that we need to do to change to make things better? And it's not a geographic thing. It's not a southern thing. It's not a northern thing. It's not a west coast thing. You know, everyone wants to put it in the south, but he shows us, like, that his plays are set in Pittsburgh. These things happen no matter where you are. So it's, you know, it's showing us our own reality.
Well, and I think, you know, just like every playwright, you know, you can't help but have your life bleed into what you're writing about. And August had a lot of bleed. I mean, there is the, like, black experience bleed, but there's also, I mean, there are a lot of daddy issues going on, and there's a lot of relationship issues.
So many daddy issues.
You know, like, I'm always fascinated by the men he creates, because he creates these men that at their core are good people. Mm-hmm. You know, at their core, they really want things for themselves. They want to have, like, a good woman. They want to have family. They want to be successful.
I'm going to step into you there. Is it at their core that they're good people, or at their core they're trying to be good people?
Well, some of them are trying, most of them are good people, but then the experience of being black in America, like, taints them and forces them to make decisions that, if they hadn't had that pressure on them, that torque on them, that they wouldn't have made. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't think so. Yeah. For Seven Guitars, I don't think Floyd would have made the decision that he does to get money if he hadn't have had that torque of, well, now I can't even do this.
Right.
Yeah.
The pressures of it. I believe that most men in August Wilson's pieces were good men. You know. Now, but the thing is, the definition of good differs. What it means to be good differs. You know. So for some of them, they're good in a sense of a family man. Some of them are good in the sense of being a performer or in being a thinker or whatever. So I think that's what it is. Is that the definition of what does it mean to be good changes, and along with that comes the pressures of being black in America, of being you know, a person dealing with all of these different pressures coming from all these different places, and that makes decisions happen. Right. And from that, they become tainted.
Well, it's funny, you said, we mentioned men, but at the same time, I think I've gained an interest in looking at how he writes the women into these scripts.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
For example, like, to watch Floyd and Vera in this play, to watch a man come back and kind of speak to his heart, where his heart is with this young lady. And then to watch her grow in the entire thing is like, well, she's trying to be good as well, and do what she can to support this man. And we watch a lot of that happen in our community. You know, thinking about my own home with my mother and father, like, you know, you watch your mother and your father try to support each other. And then just the way of the world, the black experience changes those things. You know, I remember the first time my mother came home and had been the N-word had been hurled at her out of a truck. You know, she was distraught. So, like, she dropped her groceries right there at the door. That was one of the first times I saw my father's, like, really, his compassion, you know, for my mother. And, you know, at first I thought they were just mean people. Like, you know, for most of my life, like I'm getting all these spankings and, like, you know, I got to do all this work.
They know where the cookies right? are. Yeah. They have right. access to the cookies right. and they won't let you have the cookies.
Right.
Right.
Right. So to see that from, like, you know, a young lady all the way up to, like, a Louise who is, you know, this lady who has had these experiences and then tries to share that with Vera. Yeah, I mean, I think early on I've read a few things that talk about August Wilson growing in writing in his women characters.
Yes.
So I think the black experience was probably easier for him to do as a male. And, you know, to watch the females is pretty interesting because they grow.
He was certainly a masculinist.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a masculinist. And maybe as he got older as a writer, we could call him a reformed or a reforming masculinist. But it's clear to see where his strength is. I just have a minute left, but I got to throw this question out because I always love this question about August Wilson, which is August Wilson's language. How are you guys? Like, Brandon's already took a stab. He's already been in that football. Chiquita, how's it going playing August Wilson's language for the first time?
So, you know what? It's been very, very, very interesting. I play the role of Vera Dodson, and the speech, it's very lyrical, very poetic.
Very long.
It's inverted. The sentences are inverted grammatically. And so when learning the lines, you have a tendency to want to put it in correct grammatical order, but it's inverted language in certain instances. And, you know, you say things like gonna, wanna, you know, things like that, and which is great. I mean, I say that in my own, you know, I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. That's how I speak anyway.
Right.
But so that's not really so much. But it's just like, you know, when you're trained, you know, you're trained to speak a certain way with certain diction and, you know, pronouncing your consonants and everything.
Like, wait a minute, shouldn't there be some code switching going on here right now?
And there is. I mean, it's true black vernacular, as one would say, you know. And but it's been a joy. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Cool. Well,
you want to say something, Kevin?
Yeah, happen real quick.
Real quick.
You know, playing Floyd, I'm figuring out that the one thing we've all talked about is how many lines repeat over and over again. Yes. And when you come out and see this show, you're going to see all these lines repeat. That's the most difficult part because some of them are cue lines, some of them aren't cue lines. But you have people coming and going. It's like, what is going on? Because August is a Shakespeare.
They're not quite the same.
Right. They're repeating with one little difference. So.
I mean, just yesterday, I walked in on you on the scene. Like, I had an entrance that came 5, 6, 7, 8 lines after, but I heard this line. I was like, oh, yeah, that's me.
That's my cue.
And I walked out. I was like, what are you doing?
No, that's only the third time that line is said. Sweetie, you come in on the fifth time that line.
So it is. Black Shakespeare, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is the speed, because a lot of people, I mean, Wilson is Shakespeare. You have to have an ear for it. And just like in Shakespeare, there's a certain pace to it. There's a certain click. And slowing it down actually hurts the understanding of it. So having that pace and keeping it up and making and just letting the audience figure it out is part of it, but it's beautiful.
Rhythm and blues, baby.
Awesome. Yeah, rhythm.
Well,
and blues.
I want to thank you all for coming to the show, being on the show this early Sunday morning, speaking pace and speed. We got to keep going with our show.
Do we?
Kevin Miner, Brandon
Can I just
Lee,
yes, sir.
Chiquita Melvin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Seven Guitars. Tell them when and where. Does anybody know when and where?
Seven Guitars. Come out.
UVA's drama department. Is it in the Colbert? No, it's in the
Kaplan Theater. It's in the Kaplan. Yes, we
in the Bruce
on the
Kaplan
ninth.
Theater at UVA, November 9th to November 19th. Check it out.
Please do.
Everybody wave to Brandon's live feed.
Hi.
35 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. Let's talk about things that are coming up.
Ah, no. As we drop papers.
Right.
It's okay. Right. It's been a morning.
Whew. And here are just some of your artistic things coming up this week. Currently running on November 11th. Currently running now until November 11th. We're talking about Edward Albee's A Delicate Balance, still going on at Live Arts. Also currently running until November 26th. I believe that.
The American Shakespeare Center's summer fall season featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry IV, Part 3 by Shakespeare, of course, and the modern musical Peter and the Starcatcher at the Black Forest Playhouse in Stanton. Today and tomorrow, auditions for the musical review, A View from Some Broads at Four County Players. They're looking to cast 7 to 9 women of a certain age who can sing. So check their Facebook event, which is shared on our Facebook page, for details. November 7th, Chris Allen hosts the comedy open mic night at Southern Cafe Music Hall. Chris Allen, he was just on our show last week. You can check that out at SevoPodcast.com. November 9th, UVA MFA Reading Series continues this week with Emily Nason and Robin Sarkin at New Dominion Bookshop. Also from November 9th to November 12th, the Virginia Film Festival, of course, starts. www.virginiafilmfestival.org for details. From the 9th to the 19th, it's 7 Guitars at UVA. November 10th to the number 12th over on the other side of the mountain, Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore is playing at Mary Baldwin College's Fletcher Collins Theater in Stanton. November 10th, Liz Carriage hosts 5 different acts at a comedy night at Tavern on the James. And November 11th, Phil Jason Lee's Charlottesville Writer House Seminar on Magical Realism. More than just the presence of the supernatural in a story, magical realism is the forgivable intrusion of dream into reality. And it's also, says Phil, a lot of fun. Check that out at the Charlottesville Writer House. November 11th, it's Salute, Charlottesville Ballet's tribute to American military through restaging the piece Letter of Love. Check that out. We just talked to Nina Stabile about that. November 11th to November 12th, 45 Central Virginia artists display their work at City Clay's Artisan Studio Tour at City Clay. And for your musical options this week, Bill Adams plays at Almar Cider Works at 2:30. Flume at the Bridge PAI, catching psychedelic metal flautist Max Katz before she up and moves to Portland, Oregon. That's tonight. Tonight, also the Front Porch singer-songwriter bash continues with Jason Storr and the Working Effective. Tomorrow, it's the ATM Unit and Jonah Kane West at Rapture. November 7th, Nick and Joe at Dirty Nelly's. November 7th also, Bob Huntington and then Travis Elliott at Fellini's. On November 8th, Larissa and Delusionistics at Rapture. Juniper's Lark at S Cafe. On the 9th, it's Nick and Steve Pollock at Dirty Nelly's. And November 10th, Oh Wow Boy at Glasshouse Winery. The Ragnarockers at Wild Wolf Brewery. The Gladstones at Dirty Nelly's. The UVA Chamber Singers Fall Concert at UVA's Cabell Hall. And UVA's Kinetic Sound presents their fall concert Notes at the UVA Chapel. Also on November 10th, Kendall Street Company at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. And on November 11th, the Front Porch Roots Music School offers a workshop providing a general understanding of Latino culture, specifically dance and music. It's Exploring Salsa, Latin Dance, and Percussion at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Check it out. Andale, go. November 11th, get your local metal on with Fulton Avenue at the Anteroom. Rock. November 11th, also Cat and the Travelers at Ducard Vineyards, Ragged Mountain String Band at Albemarle Cider Works, Super Vixen at Heritage on Main, Rattlebag at Wild Wolf Brewery, and DJ Groovematic at Rapture every Friday morning. It's the West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Then every Monday, of course, it's the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Also, Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music. They have a weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else? Every Tuesday, traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. It's Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. Every Wednesday, open mic night at Pro Ray Nada Farm Brewery. Bam! Open mic night at Holly's Deli and Pub hosted by Josh Mayo. Bam! Jazz Collective number 9 at Fellini's number 9. Bam! Bachata Fusion at the Ante Room presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club. Bam! DJ and friends at the Bebedero. Bam! And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Every Thursday, Lua at the Bebedero. And every Thursday,
John Dearth!
It's the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, when you need a smile, when you need some style, you just
gets to come down to Dearth.
40 minutes past the hour, giving you your artistic power. It's 94.7 WPVC, and this is Homegrown, your show about local arts. Stay tuned afterward for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore, who will be talking with...
Rick Moore?
Rick Moore, oh. Who will be talking with Meg Hubeck about an election, I think, on Tuesday. Could that be right? Could we have an election on Tuesday?
Yeah, there's one on Tuesday. Kind of an important one, too, on Tuesday.
It's just, you know,
So
the Republicans are just going to continue their hegemony.
I got a message from our fearless leader.
What's that?
He says that his wife's aunt was Bill Clinton's college girlfriend at Georgetown, so we need to give give them a little shout out. So now we have someone to ask
about Star Trek.
About, you know, the music. He plays sax, so he probably knows a little bit.
Or we could just talk to our next guest.
Oh, fine.
Back on the show, Alan Gafinski from the Bridge PAI, the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative. How's it going, Alan?
Hey, how you doing? Good to see you.
Good to see you. You brought somebody with you today.
Yes, indeed. This is Travis Thatcher. Travis, introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. I am the technical. The whole thing is like the technical.
I'm going to do it because it's so intimidating.
Please.
The technical director of composition and computer technology at UVA's McIntyre Department of Music.
Yeah. I fix things and,
and help, so much more.
Help people make
so
music.
So much more. Travis is like a little tech gnome over at the university. He just runs around and makes all of the things work and has all the ideas.
You're okay with that being a tech gnome?
Yeah, that works.
All right, as long as you're okay with it, you know.
My new stage name.
I mean, there's an element of magic to what Travis does.
All right.
I can certainly see that.
Cool.
So, tell us about the Telemetry music series.
Yeah. Telemetry Music Series is a monthly music series that we're doing at The Bridge. The Bridge is host to so many things every month. Anything from, you know, experimental music to experimental video, open mic nights, visual art, you know, all kinds of, virtually anything that walks through the door. We like to stay responsive to what is going on in the community. To that end, Telemetry kind of is this really, really amazing program that Travis and I kind of came up with that takes, that uses experimental music to kind of bridge the communities of UVA, like the creative musical community at UVA, mm-hmm. with the creative music community throughout Charlottesville and abroad, like all over the country.
What exactly does experimental music mean?
Well, so it's Telemetry. I saw kind of a need in. We have a lot of community outreach, you know, with the orchestra and the symphony and wind ensemble and a lot of the other ensembles. But they're a lot of them, and they're getting off grounds more and more. But a lot of them are formal. They're in Old Cabell Hall, which is beautiful, but like
it's gorgeous.
Not everyone knows how to get there.
Right.
It's, you know, we're trying to get more community engagement with what we're doing.
The chairs aren't fat people friendly. Can I just say that? Can I just?
They are definitely
may I just say
close
that?
Together. And I had been going to the Bridge. I've only been here about 3.5 years, but it was one of the first places in Charlottesville that I was introduced to in the local music and art scene. And I've always wanted to do something with the Bridge. And this just made a lot of sense. We have the program that I work in. They're all composers. They're PhDs that mm-hmm. are studying computer music and composition. And they all know a bunch of people. And I know a bunch of people from where I've lived and toured and... So I wanted to bring what they do into the community and bring what the community does, and I have a lot of friends and musicians in the community, to get everyone together to like formulate ideas and just kind of share their art. And then also bring in, so the idea is every month we have hopefully someone from out of town, someone from UVA, and someone from the community play. And we've done it for around 10 of them now,
uh-huh.
and it's been pretty successful. And I don't know, it's a way to cross-pollinate ideas.
So when you say computer music, is that music... played with computers, music played by computers, music partially composed by computers, like
be all of the above.
I was so hoping that you were going to just throw the all of above
and
card
we're
right
doing.
There.
Okay, so Clinton's happy geek meter just like topped off.
I think my happy art meter just topped off.
Did you hear the ding?
Right.
It was a ding.
There's a little overlap in that Venn diagram.
Dude, 2 days ago, I was just awash in Hans Zimmer's impersonation of Vangelis by watching the Blade Runner sequel. I'm down.
Yeah. Oh, you went to see the Blade Runner sequel without me?
I saw the Blade Runner sequel twice without you, my dear.
I still go to tell
you. You know what? Great. There is no loyalty anymore.
I didn't know that you were at all interested.
There's no loyalty.
Leslie, you don't have time. You were stage managing one show and about to open in another.
But you didn't even ask me. You could have at least asked.
No way. There's no way.
You could have at least said, "Hey, I'm going."
So, Alan, talk about how this works with the Bridges, with the Bridges mission.
Yeah. So the Bridge, our mission, our stated explicit mission, is bridging diverse communities through the arts, and that's an ongoing sort of as much as it is a part of what we do on a weekly, monthly basis, it's also aspirational. You know, we're always searching for the new way to bridge new communities and connect people to each other and expand upon that. So when I met Travis, when I moved to Charlottesville, the fates just moved me right next door to Travis.
That's awesome.
And, yes. Yeah, we became buds, and you know this sort of telemetry project was birthed out of just this sort of like community. You know, it was like right off the bat. You know,
I really want to be there for the moment. It's like, oh hey, I'm Travis. Oh hey, I'm Alan. What do you do, Alan? Oh, I'm the director of an aggressive arts institute that creatively tries to bridge different aspects of the community. What do you do, Travis? Oh, I'm the techno director of composition and computer technology at UVA.
What?
There's really a lot more barbecue involved.
Yeah, there's a lot more. Right.
How about a burger? And scene.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of which, if anyone wants
pickles. Yes! Yeah. So, yeah. Why are there pickles?
So we thought...
Why aren't there pickles?
Exactly. Well,
I love pickles.
We figured we were going to be hungry this morning. It's early. We didn't eat before we came. We rolled out of bed and we got in the car and came here. So we thought... Since we're talking about experimental music, we're talking about sound.
Yeah.
We would bring a loud snack to share with you guys.
Very cool. I love dill pickles.
So we can
pop that sucker open. Let's go.
Let's listen to this crisp sound right here. Ready? One, two. Oh, did you hear that?
That's nice.
That was good.
That's nice.
You know, it's a nice sort of percussive. That.
Now my wife will tell you that I spent way too much time in the pickle aisle last night at the grocery store.
Picking just the right one.
Trying to determine what I think would be the loudest pickle on the shelves. You want to pass these around? You want to grab a pickle?
I'm just going
to get in. We landed on these. These are just the supermarket brand pickles, but
they're whole kosher dill pickles.
Exactly.
Come here.
They just look hefty. They look, you know... It looks solid.
I love a good dill pickle,
grab one
man.
Of those too. Maybe we can all crunch this at the same time. We can see what kind of decibels we register.
Ready?
Ready?
All right, here we go.
Ready? One, two, three.
Oh my God.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
That's good stuff right there.
Yeah. All right. That's a good. That's a good breakfast. That goes well with your coffee, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
See, Alan, you don't understand how much I love dill pickles.
Yeah.
You know those huge bottles of dill pickles, jars of dill pickles in Sam's?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can go through one of those in a week and a half.
Wow. Yikes!
They're my favorite snack.
That sounds dangerous.
I love them.
You're going to wind up pickled yourself, that much vinegar.
Well, if the actual pickles won't do it, the whiskey will.
All right.
And so appropriate for artists to get themselves intentionally into a pickle.
Yeah.
That's where creativity lies.
Yeah, help yourself. I don't want to take these pickles home.
I told you, I love dill pickles. I will eat this whole thing right now.
I just can't wait to hear this later, like the recording later. I'm just going to go back and listen to...
What I can't wait is I can't wait for one of your composers to take the sound.
Yes, and
do
it.
And get into a musical piece.
Yes.
If someone does, we'll be sure to send it in.
So in December, getting ahead of ourselves a bit, but December's telemetry, my colleague Peter Busigal
And I have a project called University School,
uh-huh.
which we just thought, well, we were driving around in the car, like, what should we call this thing that we're doing? And I'm like, well, you know, kind of poking, not poking fun, but, you know.
But poking
we
fun.
We both work at the university.
There you go.
But, like, is there, like, a university school? Like, poking fun at the seriousness of new music sometimes. But, so basically, we make a bunch of food and play drum machines. And so far, we've made several hundred pancakes and grilled cheese sandwiches. And we're not sure about the food this December. But Telemetry December 9th will feature University School in some sort of culinary...
Well, all right.
It's techno.
Great. It's great. They're playing synthesizers, drum machines, and, like, flipping flapjacks at the same time.
It's
hilarious.
And
that's awesome.
Very high art.
It's very
so
high art.
So that's nice to hear that there can be some fun and frivolity in music. Because, like you said, when I think of experimental music, when I think of especially new music, when I think of the phrase new music, I immediately go back to being taken to the symphony by my parents to hear a modern piece that was amelodic, atonal, not like anything I'd heard, and then then I think maybe halfway, three quarters of the way through it, somebody in the audience, like, this is a symphony audience, right? This is a bunch of bored bourgeois white people with money. And one guy actually gets up and just boos, just at the top of his voice.
No way.
He was not feeling it. And you know, you gotta be doing something to move those people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, because normally they just sit there, fall asleep, and clap when it's over.
I would call that a success.
Right?
You get a reaction out of people.
You got a real strong reaction from the piece you created.
That was visceral.
That was visceral,
man.
Really moved him to stand up.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the crisp crunch of a dill.
Uh-huh. Well, no, I mean, that's another reason why this is so much fun to do at the Bridge. You know, we've got the university, both the music department and the provost for the arts is supporting it, so we can actually keep it free and even pay some of our people, which is like unheard of.
That's awesome.
And it's informal, like it's not a stuffy concert hall. It's just an art gallery, and you come in. This Thursday's Telemetry will involve an 8-channel surround sound improvisational piece with flocking algorithms and all this like crazy systems that Kevin Davis and Eli Stein have made. But it's also going to be, you know, we get 50 people in there and you're shoulder to shoulder, and now there's going to be 8 speakers all over the place. It's going to be
that's really cool.
It's an experience.
Yeah, it definitely allows for like an intimacy that like some larger venues around town it doesn't work. That's sort of it's the nice thing about the space that we offer. But we enjoy like a really great partnership with UVA Arts and the McIntyre Music School at the Bridge, and it's been going really well, and we've been able to partner up and do some really powerful things that not only push boundaries musically but kind of like erase boundaries like physically,
yes.
You know?
Like, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So it's been really great to just kind of like see the connections that form when different people get into a room, and you know, people who are here for the visual art get inspired by the sound art or get inspired by the poetry that happens the next week. I don't know, there's just so much collision happening in the space, which is really, really inspiring to be around.
Yeah. Or my favorite, the other month, there were just some people there for the Potter's beer and wine. They did a little extra, and we had a particular... It was a difficult piece. It was good. It was Alex's. He had a very high frequency, sort of beat frequency, so like two pitches very close together. And you I remember a couple coming in to get a drink just sort of loudly yelling about what was going on. And it was awesome, and I know the composer was also like pretty pleased with that reaction, because it's like... We get people that are we're exposing them to things they wouldn't normally be exposed to in a setting that they don't expect it. And I think that's really fun. And not everyone loves it, but people do. And we do get a really good response from people.
Cool.
What I think is so beautiful about that is the same thing I think about like public sculpture. You know, like a public sculpture goes up or a mural goes up, and like some people hate it, you know? And that is okay. Like, you have a feeling about something, you
and
know?
And that's it. Yeah.
And you learn to live with the fact that you don't quite like that piece of art. But you live in a city where other people do like that piece of art. And, you know, we got to learn to share the lane, you know? And
oh, wow.
And just, you know, exist with each other and learn from each other and push our boundaries and experience something new and learn how to not let it ruin our day and grow from it. So I think that this telemetry series does that in a lot of ways because it really pushes boundaries for a lot of people. And it opens a lot of doors in that regard.
Alan Gafinski, crunching pickles and dropping knowledge. That's thank right. you so much for coming. Travis, thank you for coming too. Travis Thatcher from UVA. Telemetry this Thursday.
That's right.
Monthly series every second Thursday?
It fluctuates.
It fluctuates.
Check the calendar, bridgepai.org.
Check the calendar, bridgepai.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're not taking the pickles.
You can finish pickles the pickles.
We're going to finish the pickles.
You can finish the pickles.
I'm finishing
the one that I'm chewing on.
Okay. Yeah, you can finish that one.
I just want to say, this Thursday is Grand Banks, who are Tyler McGill and David Salisbury. They're playing as well as, I mentioned, Eli Stein and Kevin Davis, and then Rob McKay from the University of Hull in the UK.
Ooh,
so awesome.
It's going to be all over the place. And it's free.
It's going to be a good Thursday. Come out. Free. It's free.
Awesome.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Holy smokes. How long is that?
Holy smokes. I will make it fit.
And now it's time for Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Yes, it's time for the Weekly Rant. Okay, so the recent revelations about Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey have rocked the entertainment industry. But not really. Anyone who's been in the entertainment industry for any length of time knows what the deal is. Don't steal my pickles. What are you going with the pickles? Since Hollywood's inception, there has been the casting couch. And we must do our best to make sure the artists that are creating for us are treated like any other person going to work. And it is work. In order to do that work well, they need to have the space to feel safe. They have to feel like they have freedom to express themselves without worrying about harassment, unwanted advances, or someone demanding they perform a certain sexual act. This profession is different in that you don't get a job that you keep for 20 years. You get a job and you might have it for 6 months, but it's a miracle if you have it for more than 3 years. Artists are always in flux. So to threaten our livelihood becomes a bigger concern when this is a person who decides who gets the work in the future. This also brings up a much bigger question. How are we in our everyday lives maintaining and supporting this behavior? How do you talk about women? How do you talk about men? Is your language and even your jokes, are they respectful to other people? Haven't we gotten past the time where making fun of someone else for something they can't control is funny? I think we have. But some of us just haven't gotten that memo. And the only way to stop that is to attack it as soon as it happens in front of us. Don't let that person slide. Call them out on it as soon as the behavior occurs. Let them know it's unacceptable and it will not be accepted in your presence. And hopefully, eventually, they will get the memo. And that's the Weekly Rant.
This has been Homegrown, your show about local art. We'd like to thank our guests, Nina Staben, Brandon Lee, Kevin Miner, Chiquita Melvin, Leslie M. Scott Jones, Alan Kapinski, and Travis Thatcher. Stay tuned. Coming up for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. He's going to be talking to Meg Hubeck about the upcoming election on Tuesday. David, we love you. Tell your day job to give you a go. See you next week.
Listening to home.
94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.